Harley Davidson is trying to ride into the future. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. First, remember how the Republican tax overhaul put a $10,000 limit on state and local tax deductions, and then several mostly blue states have been trying to find innovative slash sneaky ways around that? Well, the Treasury Department is now saying, nope, not today to those efforts. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
States with high state and local taxes say the $10,000 cap on deductions isn't fair. They've come up with some creative ways of getting around it. One was to basically turn state and local tax payments into charitable contributions that can be fully deducted. But the Treasury Department issued a proposed rule yesterday that would prevent that. The proposal would limit some charitable deductions on federal income taxes. Taxpayers would have to subtract any deductions they got on their state and local taxes before claiming the charitable deduction on their federal returns. The Treasury Department gives this example. Say you donate $1,000 to a charity, but your state gives you a 50% credit on it, a $500 credit. The new Treasury rule says you can only deduct the $500 you didn't get a state tax credit on. But this isn't the end of the tax tussle between states and the federal government. Some states are suing, claiming the cap on state and local tax deductions is unconstitutional. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The Federal Reserve has come out with a paper warning against waiting too long to fight inflation, even in situations like the current one where inflation is pretty well under control. Chris Lowe has thoughts on this. He's chief economist at FTN Financial. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Sabri.
What's the big picture argument in this paper that was just out?
The paper posits that if the Fed waits for inflation to begin to rise before it raises interest rates, it results in poor outcomes, including excessively high inflation, excessive growth, and potentially market bubbles.
And so the battle is, do you wait for inflation to show up before you start fighting it, or do you fight it before it shows up? And you are on a side in that argument. You're on the side of, if you don't see the inflation, then maybe don't worry about it as much right now.
The Fed is moving gradually. They're not raising rates at every meeting. Instead, they're going at every other meeting. It gives them more time to monitor data. It gives markets more time to react. And I think that's an appropriate way of conducting policy.
Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Thank you, as always.
Thank you, Sabri.
The Harley-Davidson motorcycle is a cultural artifact. It's a piece of Americana. But it is also a product that needs to sell for its company to survive. And that has landed Harley in a very awkward spot between President Trump's America First trade policies and its own desire to be a global brand. After Europe slapped tariffs on the motorcycles in retaliation for President Trump's tariffs on European products, Harley said it would move more production overseas. The president, who at one point praised the company, now supports a boycott, not what the company needs. Claire Suddeth just wrote a cover story for Bloomberg Businessweek on the future of Harley-Davidson, and she's with us. Hi, Claire.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So if someone says the word Harley-Davidson, there is a mental image that's going to pop up. A gray-haired guy in his 50s or 60s, probably wearing leather, has a real independent streak, riding this beast of a motorcycle out on the open road. You basically write that this cultural association is both a tremendous asset for Harley-Davidson and a millstone around its neck. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So essentially, you have an entire demographic group of people who love this company so much that they get tattoos of Harley Davidson. They wear its logo on the back of their jackets. You know, they have been around for decades. But the problem with that, you know, from the company's perspective is essentially, one, they've already bought their motorcycles for the most part. And two, that image that they have cultivated over the years is not particularly appealing to younger people, people in cities, people who think or look or just sort of view the world a bit differently from them.
It was surprising to read in your reporting just how tough Harley has had it, especially since the Great Recession. They haven't even fully recovered from that.
Yeah, well, they can cost a lot of money. I mean, the cheaper ones are a few thousand dollars, but they go up to $45,000. And during the recession, people either didn't have that money or didn't feel like they did. And so around that time, Harley's sales actually tumbled 40%, which is pretty incredible. And they rebounded a little bit for a few years, but then since 2014, they've been tumbling again.
Harley-Davidson needs new customers. Who and where are they?
The who is that they're younger, they're urban, and the where is pretty interesting. Obviously, they're in America, but also there are a lot of them in Asia and Europe.
President Trump's tariffs on aluminum and steel cost Harley money because their bikes are made out of aluminum and steel. Retaliatory tariffs from the EU directly target Harley-Davidson. How much are the president's trade battles costing this company?
So this year alone, it's going to be about $55 million all told is what Harley thinks. But if everything continues on into the next year and after that, they're looking at about $100 million a year, which is pretty crazy. So they decided that they're going to move production from the U.S. overseas, specifically the bikes they sell in Europe, they'll make outside of the U.S. going forward.
Claire Suddeth, staff writer for Bloomberg Businessweek, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.